Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trundy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Another week of yarning up strong here on your First Nation radio station, Bummer Brisbane Media, BBM 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, for your daily program, National Talk Black. Give me a call, have you say, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416.
And I'm dreaming.
Desert to the sea. All my tribes live between to the sea.
Oh, to the sea.
Cook of the Wirangoo Morning lives in me.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Mob, this is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Very good morning. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yana Strong. Yana with the bully one here. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say, Yana Strong. Your mom, we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, Bumblebee Media. And that daily number again, 1-800-422-416. We're going to catch up with Yana. We've got Kay Hamilton on the line, a disability support provider and guardian to her three sons. Now, COVID leaves Aussies with disabilities stranded from support. And so we've got Kay on the line to talk about that situation. Kay, very good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, Kay. Where are you based?
I'm I'm based in Brisbane.
All right, sister. Thank you very much for calling. So looking at your situation, a mum got into three participants of NDIS, so your three sons. So tell us your story there, please, Kay.
So we have three. We have four children in total, ranging between 23 and 14. Mm. But our younger three boys that are aged 14, 16 and 20 are all participants of the NDIS, primarily for an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. But the older two of the three boys also have a significant intellectual impairment as well.
Okay. And so you're finding with COVID-19 has really turned our world upside down. You're finding Aussies, Australians with disability are stranded from support. So you're finding this struggle hard of COVID because of COVID-19?
Yeah, absolutely. The NDIS system, unfortunately, was already quite stretched through, I guess, the way that it was rolled out and quality providers were quite sparse. And then you add in a pandemic where everybody is shut down. Mm. And then when you are re-engaging with those support networks, again, you're fighting off a wait list that was already, you know, somewhat, in some cases, months, and then dealing with the backlog of those appointments. Because obviously having two borderline non-verbal children, electronic platforms and, you know, Zoom calls and that nature isn't actually effective. When you're dealing with a non-verbal or a significant intellectual impairment, because their body language does form such a big part of their quality of treatment and how they communicate.
Well, when you look at COVID-19, it came to the scene like February last year, 2020, and we had, like I said, a yucky year now. So over these 12 months, you could say, has it changed? Has support come to the table as such, Kay?
No, it hasn't. We already have seen the flow-on effect of that. I was in a review recently with a participant, and the delegate of NDIS made comment that their plan wasn't used, to its full expenditure amount, and, you know, therefore they believe that that plan was overfunded and they wanted to cut funds, but they seem to not be able to understand the reason why the funds have been left unused is due to a pandemic status. So when there's no supports to action or, you know, services are closing down and not providing support to participants, well, naturally the flow and effect is that the funds go unused. But it's not a true reflection of the participants' needs, which is quite frustrating.
And if the funds go unused and they don't put that same amount of money back on the table?
No, they don't. They will try to cut that back.
Exactly. It feels like, well, you don't need that full amount then because you didn't use it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Exactly, yes.
It's just not the case. It's just not the case at all.
So there's you could say lack of communication between, NDIS or the people involved talking to the government. It's falling down somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think it is actually due to the delegates of the NDIS, you know, whilst they're professionals in their field, they may not necessarily have a really good understanding of the impact of living with a disability and what that requires. And they're quite reactive. So when you're going through the plan review process as a provider, you know, you're providing a report around how things are at that point. But then that could change quite significantly and quite drastically very quickly. So they're very reactive in that sense, and it can take an extended amount of time to get a more adequate plan through once they've made their decision.
Yeah. Look, a mother's love never dies. You are very strong in regard to your four children, especially with your three sons who are participants of NDIS. Just paint that picture regarding your day or your week and how you operate with your beautiful children there, sister.
So we operate, I work full-time, as does my husband, and I work within the disability support area as well.
Okay.
So every afternoon we have Special Olympics combined with occupational therapy, physiotherapy, psychology, and, you know, day programs as well for our eldest boy. He goes to supported day programs. You know, he also has 24-hour one-on-one care, which is provided through Australian Communities. So that's the care that gets him out of bed, you know, does his home, you know, he helps him with his housework and live independently as any other 20-year-old would in the community.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he lives with you, does he?
No, he actually lives in his own home.
Okay. Yep.
And he's supported in a one-on-one situation through Australian Communities with support staff. So those support staff provide everything from prompting him to do his personal care to helping him make healthy choices for dinner, transport him around, you mm-hmm. know, to and from his community access as well as appointments.
Okay. Does he work?
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
He's not able to work due to his impairment, so
sure.
he actually attends a day program,
okay.
Which is disability specific.
Yeah, fantastic. In regards to more power to him, living his life and trying to be as independent as possible. And what about the three younger ones? They live at home with you, don't they, Kay?
Yeah, so we have the two younger ones at home with us at the moment. So they attend supported education, sort of between school hours, as well as they have their, you know, their social and community activities outside of school hours and on the weekends as well.
And husband, of course, got a full-time job, so you're both out there bringing, how you say, money to the table.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We both work full-time. My husband works in a medical sort of field, whereas I work in the NDIS field myself.
Mm. So a lot more work needs to be done in this space. And where are you at with the funding as such? Has NDIS lost that funding as we spoke earlier? Or are they at the table negotiating, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that what's happened is that due to the amount of people that weren't able to use their plan in full, they've actually taken the view that if it wasn't used, you know, they've reduced that fund.
Yeah.
And they're not bringing it back to the table. So you do need a very strong advocate for your child or, you know, your loved one that is going through the planning process to be able to get adequate funding for that participant based on their personal situation. And it would appear that, you know, NDIS don't view that. They almost have a very siloed view of this diagnosis requires this and this diagnosis requires that. And that's actually not the case at all. You know, we do have socioeconomic backgrounds that require different support, cultural backgrounds as well, which may require different supports. You know, they really don't have the holistic view of that individual person and what their community means to them.
Well, exactly. And when you look at what COVID-19 has done globally, it's really put a strain on governments and all industries as such. But I suppose that there's got to be some sort of leeway or some sort of understanding that COVID-19 has turned things upside down. So you need to look at each case on its own merits into what has happened, especially in the space of NDIS and looking after disabled Australians.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just quite astounding that only 1 in 10 people with a disability are actually accessing the NDIS, and that really concerns me because that means that a lot of people with disabilities are actually going unsupported. And the stress that would place on them as individuals and their guardians or family members would just be astronomical. Mm. And that's quite concerning. You know, and then you've got, you know, 17% of those people that are struggling to access, you know, support or nowhere to start. When you have carer fatigue and, you know, people with intellectual impairments, they're really being left to fend for themselves, which is really quite concerning when you're talking about quality of service and value for money and choice and control, which is what the NDIS set out to provide to participants.
Yeah, look, we're having this yarn here on national radio, National Talk Black, going across the country. Governments are listening, so hopefully the penny drops. And look, thank you for sharing. All the best to you and your beautiful family. And look, stay in touch, Kay. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there with Kay Hamilton. Her name is disabled support provider and guardian to her three sons. Actually, four kids she got. One of her children is 20 years old, living his own life. But he's disabled as well, and the other three kids are participants of NDIS, and talking about the funding that has ceased because of the situation. Feels that the money hasn't been spent, so they're looking at getting a small amount of money the following year round, so not good at all. And because of COVID-19, like I said, spun our world upside down, and I think government needs to look at all different cases and all different industries for their merit. I know we here in far north Queensland, Australia, struggling in the tourist industry, and regarding scary times for March is when they're looking at stopping the funding for the JobKeeper. So we don't know how it's going to survive if that is the case here in the tourist industry. Biggest industry in Far North is tourism, and we are struggling. Have your say, Yanup Strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
It's the Dia Double Crooker, that the Y coming at ya. Got the whole crew here ready to attack ya. With the beats and the rhythm on the scratcher, showing you that I'm the bomb ass rapper. When I wanna be, I can be dangerous. Soon I'm gonna be the world's most greatest. I'm up to date with the world war latest. I chuck on my favorite playlist. When I dance, got moves like Matrix. Moves that are fresh and moves that are ancient. Battling the war with friends and relations. But now I'm clearing the pages.
Yeah, I will. Sniggity coming and speaking to realists. I'm one of the illest of villains. I'm running with dealers, visible criminals, banging invisible. Haters are looking for miracles, looking hysterical. Haters are yapping, spitting the clapping, tell them what happened. When you get that money, stacking, rapping, holding the rap game captive. Vividly massive, laughing, criminally acting, best as well. Still drinking and selling, no telling you're dealing with felons, no acting. You seen it, I'm in it to win it. A drill, I'm a killer, I'm eating from calm. Mama, I'm driven by the dangerous pride.
That's who I am.
The black youth, hurry up to and join the huddle. We're proving truth to societies and trying to rubble. Minds feed the start of double. Lies beat deceit, defeat the best man humble. Keep your spirit to land, although your sneaks on the street. I still realize your people still ain't squashing. Betty beat the skin deep, but I'm betting that they just feel threatened. From this one city, keep all of me, get a made. Black reppin'.
Western Orinda, Chapel Cherry Bar, put it all together, straight up black fella. I rock colors in black and white, recite ancient stories from dream time. When I fly on the mic, let me take you back to the mission. So listen, we fighting for existence, resisting for instance. My thoughts flying like a piston, you're not with my brothers and sisters. Can you feel the question and the message represent?
You know, that's who I am, where I stand today.
Standing strong.
Rapping the NT streets, down the VIC. Rapping and rapidly attacking all the hip-hop beats. See what happens when you see indigenous MCs. Rock across the nation, hoping to get overseas. Cause it's more than just a dream, plus we do this for our people. Defeat for all the evil that we see every day. Hoping that the sun shines so we can see better days.
Who's that there? Aboriginal, cool like air. On the microphone, fly like a spear. With them flows, sound smooth, sound slick. Out the stereo, I'm a gun, baby. I hold it down like a boss to represent, baby. To a number one, you money, you ladies. You fans, you love and you use, hate me. It's D-Boy, baby.
But that's who I am, where I stand today.
Standing strong.
Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, there's a book out, God, the Devil and Me. This is written by Alf Taylor. Darkly humorous memoir takes on God and the Devil. And renowned Noongar elder, poet and storyteller, Alf Taylor, long time now, delves into the past to share a unique and highly entertaining autobiography, chronicling his life growing up as a member of the Stolen Generations in the famous New Nursia Mission north of Perth. On the line, we've got Uncle Alf Taylor. A very good morning. How are you, Uncle?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Trevor. Yeah.
Thank you, my friend. Uncle, let the mob know who you mob, where you from.
Yeah, now I'm a Yungari from Perth in Western Australia. My father, he was a Kuamara from around Yunorsia and Perth and that. And my mother was a Ngadju from Norseman, Esperance Way.
Okay, fantastic. Now, as a young Noongar child, Uncle Alf, you was taken into New Nursia Mission. That's 130 kilometres north of Perth, and you grew up at the mission until the age of 15, and then got out of there hitchhiking to Coolgardie and then Perth, and to find your mother and virtually drink yourself to death. There's a statement here on the back of the book here. I got the hot book in my hand. So tell me about your story there, about your upbringing in the mission.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were Spanish monks and nuns. This mission, you know, she was founded by the Dom Reverend Bishop Salvado. And in that time, they were grabbing all fair-skinned Aboriginal kids.
Mm.
Well, mainly Yungai kids. And the government at that time was inviting all the missionaries to come to... I suppose Australia, but particularly to Western Australia, and implement the British way of life into our ends.
And, so you were a stolen generation. You had no say in the matter. You kids were taken into the mission.
Yes, yeah. We were just taken, put in there. See, because the colour of your skin verified that you go into a mission and learn about England, not about Australia.
Yes.
Yeah. And in those days, the government over here used to give the mothers the child endowment. You ever heard of that?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, child endowment, but they wouldn't give it to the Aboriginal mothers over here.
Mm.
They gave it to all these missionaries came over. And because I remember when I first went in, I had number 4. That was my number. You know, it was like a prison number.
Yeah, you didn't have a name. You had a number, 4. Uncle. Yeah,
no,
sad.
I found out I was number 4.
Yep.
And then I graduated to about 17. And the more boys you got in, and I ended up with number 75 or 73, I think.
Yeah. And how was the treatment in the mission, Uncle?
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was bad. They used the Christian religion, you know, to get at us. Because I remember Father Basil telling us, you know, if you ever talk in your Aboriginal tongue, which many of us didn't really know about because we were taken away too young, you know.
Yeah,
you talk about in your Aboriginal tongue or talk about your Aboriginal culture, God is coming down from heaven and sending you to hell.
Yeah, so that was the fear they put in you and your education in regarding life and God.
Yeah, that was it, you know, because when you're a small kid, you know, you bleed that.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I went and they said, you'll go to hell and you'll never see your mums and dads again. See, they used that on us too.
Yeah.
And the biggest hurt, well, not only me, but all these other kids were there. We hurted for our mum and dad.
Of course you did. Yep.
Yeah.
And at the age, age of 15 is when you took off. You got out of there. Did you escape? Did you? And then you went hitchhiking north.
Yeah, no, me and a friend of mine, he was like a relation, my man, see, because at that given time, when you become a teenager, the government stops giving the missionaries this endowment money.
So they don't want you.
Like I said, they didn't pay the Aboriginal mothers the endowment, paid it all these missionaries, And when you run away at a certain age, that's, oh, let him go now. He doesn't get, we don't get paid for him.
Yeah, he's no longer a till, so to speak. No more money in the till.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to escape or take off, then go. We don't get money for you anyway.
That's how they looked at us.
Yeah, and so you wrote this book, God, the Devil, and Me, and told you, virtually telling your story as a young boy, Aboriginal boy, in a mission, and how you were treated.
Well, it, you know, like going back to that child, I tell you what, it was scary.
Yeah, devastating, yeah.
Have you ever
been back there? Is it the building still there, or...?
Yeah, everything is still there. I stayed away for 25 years, and I went up there not so long ago with a group of boys.
And the fear, the memories came back, and daunting, upsetting?
Well, they're not so upsetting because I looked around for all the boys I used to play marbles with.
Yeah, beautiful. I got a picture of kids, or a black hand, a little small hand playing marbles on your book here with a church in the background and the so-called evil spirits, the devil spirits above.
But at that time, we thought it was heaven sent. That place was built on by God himself, and we were put there, but that's how they put it into our heads.
As well as the fear of God and you going to hell if you're talking your language or talking your culture, were there any floggings as such?
Every day of the week.
Every day of the week, exactly.
Because, we're kids and... little young kids, I used to get a flogging for stealing marbles.
Yeah, well, that just shows you your living truth to how black people were treated back in the day, Uncle.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. We had it bad. See, that's. I'm hoping that there's other people. I'm in my 70s now. I tell you what, that took me over 20-odd years to finish.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I've written two books of poems and a book of short stories.
Good on you. And using those books and poems as a way of, educating people, but telling your story and to show how, what Australia operated back in the day.
Yeah, I know. And it was scary, not so much, because we were young kids, you're just a young kid, you want to do everything, but to me, that pencil saved me. I love reading and writing.
Yeah, beautiful. Yep.
Yeah.
And yourself, any kids, you get married? What happened after the so-called mission?
Got married, had kids, that mission really buggered us up. I couldn't form a relationship with anyone.
Are you no longer with your wife?
No, we're parted, separated, divorced.
Yeah.
But the kids, my eldest son, he's passed on. But my daughter, I got a tribe of grandkids.
Oh, good. So you're in touch with your children and your grandkids? Are you?
They're all the time. I go up and have Christmas with them.
Beautiful. Yep. So they know your story and you're telling your story and you're educating people.
They all got my books and hopefully maybe one of them would fall in love with the pencil
like you. Well, we all got a story to tell, haven't we? And here we are I was just saying, here we are in the 21st century, and we just recently had a Australia Day, Survival Day. We are still fighting for our rights as black people in this country, Uncle.
Exactly, true. And I went down to this march we had in Perth here, and that was a big march, I was quite impressed with all the young Wadjalas now who are joining in.
All the white people here, all our white brothers and sisters.
Yeah. What do you call them over there?
Miglus, Collies.
Oh, that's right.
Well, the Wadjalas joining in.
Yeah.
Which is good,
and
isn't it, brother?
Another station over in Townsville over there.
Yeah, Townsville, 4K1G, yep.
No, I was called up for national service in 1970.
Oh, sorry, yeah, okay, rightio. So did you serve with the forces?
I was at Laverack Barracks in Townsville there.
Yep, see? How you were treated and they still call you up to fight for this country. Unbelievable, Uncle, unbelievable.
Yeah, it didn't bother me because, you know, I think that mission made me tough.
Yeah, it sure did, Uncle, sure did. And look, people can read about it in your book. The book is out, God, the Devil and Me, Alf Taylor.
Yes.
Fantastic book, nice cover here, Uncle. And I'm going through the chapters here. And look, a very, very powerful story, Uncle. And I thank you for sharing.
But, you know, in the, when I wrote the book, they wanted me to write the poem, God, the Devil and Me, and I wrote the poem. Could I read it out over there?
Please do. Go ahead, Uncle. Yes.
Yeah. This is the poem that's in that's in about the third page, I think.
Okay,
God,
ready?
The Devil and Me.
Yep.
God, the Devil and Me. A long time ago as a child in the mission, oh, how I cried when I was told that God and the devil will always be by my side. I tried and I tried to be a good little Yungar boy, but these religious people was always telling me there's always going to be God, the devil and me. I've always longed for the bush that I see, but I keep hearing God, the devil and me. All I want is to be free, free from the mission. With my mother I want to be, but these religious people keep telling me, God, the devil, with me. When I'm in a position to be out of this mission, then I'll be free. Free from God, free from the devil. But being told as a child, all I hear is God, the devil, and me. Even today as a man, I can still hear and see those terrible words, God, the devil, with me. Thank you.
Uncle Alf, that's beautiful, but can I just say you are free, and you are free from that mission, and now you've written a book about it. You are free in more ways than one, Uncle, and I thank you very much for sharing, Uncle Alf. All the best to your family, and all the best to you. Please do keep in touch, and you keep that pen going strong, and your children or your grandchildren will pick up that pen is what you're hoping for, Uncle.
Good, yeah.
Good on you.
And a big cheerio, hello, and a big hug to so all that Murray mob up there.
All the Murray mob and all your Noongar mob as well, Uncle.
Okay,
God bless.
You,
take care.
Same to you.
Bye-bye. Bye. A powerful story, a beautiful story, a beautiful man, Uncle Alf Taylor. And his book is out, God, the Devil and Me. And as you heard there by his poem that he wrote, that's in that book and the first couple of pages, God, the Devil and Me, Alf Taylor. Very, very powerful. And as a Noongar man, a First Nation child growing up in the mission and how he was treated, and the scaring, the fact that he used the God, the Devil and Me, and if he did wrong or spoke his language, did his culture, the devil will get him. And if he stays on track and stays away from his culture, God will look after him. So that's the teachings. It's very sad. And he wrote a book about it. And free in more ways than one. Have your say. Jan Armstrong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
I see the birds up in the tree, you know that I just wanna be free. I see the clouds up in the sky, you know that I just wanna fly high. Oh, small time, I know where you live. And small child, I know what you give to me. Yeah. when you speak, you whisper words so soft in my head. Thank God I learned to listen to the inner child. Is anybody listening to me? Is anybody listening to that time? Child inside, remember all the times we've cried, remember all the times we've laughed, when we all had children's hearts. Let your mind swim wild and free, like the fishes in the sea. Imagine all that you can be. Now hold on to the one you love, then you can fly above this earth, you and me. Your small child, I know where you live, where you live. My small child, I know what you give to me. When you speak, you whisper words so soft in my heart. Thank God I learned to listen to the inner child. Is anybody listening to? Is anybody listening to? Is anybody listening to that time? Oh, 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 that time. Anybody listening to? Anybody listening to? Anybody listening to?
Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day. Dusty red highway. I got this freedom flowing wind in my hair. Soaking up the wild desert country. All my worries are gone, I don't care. Hey mom, I can just taste your fish soup and rice. I'm coming back home to you. Out at the place of the city life. Soon I'll be dreaming in blue. Soon I'll be dreaming in blue.
Yeah.
Soon I'll be dreaming in blue.
Track there, Feel Like Going Home. That's with Ernie Dingo and Missy Higgins on their Brand New Day soundtrack. Hope you're having a great day, your mob. Murray going to sign off here. Thank you very much for your company. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Thoughts, prayers are going out to Mob at Yarraba. Thinking of you guys. So very sorry what's happening over there with our three fishermen. Love you dearly and pray God that you're all strong. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray from the Curry, Trinity Trev signing off here. Look, stay safe. We are still in the pandemic and operate by the rules that are upon us. That's the best medicine we got. Let's have Rochelle Watson-Pitt, sister, taking us up to the news. If you've got a problem, take a listen. Too deadly.
To get
through with